yhteistyössä HAM, Helsingin kokoinen taidemuseo, hamhelsinki.fi.
Hyvää iltapäivää, good afternoon everyone, and welcome to today's interview with an artist, Fleece Holland. Hi Fleece.
Hey Andy.
How are you doing?
Good, good, just surviving the darkness so far.
Yeah, it's still getting darker, but I don't know, after a week maybe it gets a bit lighter, so we still have to wait some more. But yeah, we will survive. Yeah, that's the theme. Today we are going to talk about work that is probably the latest of the Helsinki Art Museums or Helsinki's public art projects, or I don't know, how should I call this, like public art works. And it is called 25-7, and it is in Kalasataman puisto in Helsinki, and it's not something that you can actually go and see, because you have to experience this in a very particular way. But first, let's maybe we can sort of combine everything together. How did you sort of end up with this idea of working in Kalasataman puisto and then combining this sort of like science fiction part in the work? Because I think it's super interesting to experience it, because the whole area, the Kalasatama, there are still like construction sites, and it's sort of like this Blade Runner-ish feeling, at least now when it's dark and it's raining. So how did you sort of found all these parts of 25-7?
Well, I was invited to do the work as a group of different artists were invited to make their own artworks separately by City of Helsinki, because, as you say, the whole area has been essentially razed and then rebuilt into residential and commercial. That means there's been all this percent for art funding, so there's a whole slew of artists doing different works. And in the original invitation, it was aimed towards the area's status as how it's been a trial zone for smart city innovations. So that smart city means where devices and digital services are used to make residents' daily life much more streamlined. So a lot of data collection going in, and then a lot of new innovations coming out. So they've had everything from self-driving buses to a lot of those food delivery robotic trucks to smart waste collection and smart metering and things. And at first I kind of wasn't sure how to respond to that. It was exciting to be asked, but I wasn't sure what was my way in. And then I was reading the PR by Forum Virium, that's the City of Helsinki's innovation company, and they had this tagline that I just got obsessed with, which was, they said they'd made residents' lives so streamlined and so efficient in the area that they were saving them an hour per day. They were giving them an extra hour per day. And so I just decided to take it literally. came up with this sci-fi, I guess it's like a classic sci-fi tool where you change one thing and see how it plays out.
Yeah.
I took it literally, decided within Kalasatama people got 25 hours a day, everyone else in Helsinki gets 24, and tried to, follow that chain of thought.
Yeah. It's first when I start to, okay, maybe we hold make a little pause here, because I think now we have to sort of talk about the structure of the work, because it's something that there is a lot to see, but also even more to hear. So maybe we can go through a little bit about like how to experience the work. Where does it sort of start, and what do you need to start to the experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I just want to say is this is made in collaboration with composer Juli Haverinen, and it features 16 voice actors. And it's got two versions, so there's a Finnish version and an English version. And the way you listen to it, it's a sound walk in the park. You listen to it using a free app. And there's all instructions of how to download this and different tips for using it at flissholland.com/257. As I said, the app is free. You don't have to sign up. In terms of access, it's in the park, but all of the places where you'd listen to sound are on pathways. There's a lot of seating in the park. It's terrible weather at the moment to spend the time in the park. But if you're going there, it's a little bit warmer time, or at least a drier time. There's a lot of seating. The nearest accessible toilets are in Reading. But if you are too ill, too tired, too busy, or for whatever reason you can't get to the park, it's also possible to listen off-site. And it's the version, the each version is 30 minutes long. And so when you have this app, you download it to your phone, you use your own headphones, and it tracks your GPS. So as you walk through the park, it follows your location. You essentially walk through bubbles of sound, and which trigger. And when you're walking through, the things that you'll hear are snippets of those 16 voice actors' phone conversations, and those are scattered along the paths. And in amongst those, you'll hear compositions that were made with Yuli. And these are where Yuli's incorporated field recordings that we did in Kalasatamas. So using, there were different experimental microphones, but the main one was using an EMF mic, so electromagnetic frequency. And that picked up signals from electronic devices and infrastructure that are usually silent. And so those were made audible and fed into this new, beautiful composed reality that you really helped me with.
It's I love the sort of the little snippets or the clips that they somehow form a, I don't know if you call it a story. It's not like a narrative. It's like a sort of like a landscape, because there are something that you can sort of maybe figure out that, okay, time has gone a little bit more since the last clip, but then again, there's no like signals of or some signifiers of a certain time or like a specific time. So you sort of, there's like a lot to figure out. But I love the sort of the whole picture that you draw in front of us, or at least in front of me when I was there. And I even recognized some of the voices. I maybe like they were a friend of mine, and then I was like, oh, maybe he lives in that building, or maybe they've like been here before. So I think it's like a beautiful picture of the city, but also a city that doesn't really exist, or does it?
Or does it? Or is it just about to come into existence? So it's sort of, I guess one of the questions is, what are the futures we are designing and who are we designing them for? Because in the work, as I've said, there's this idea of the extra hour, but it's pushing that a little bit further. Maybe the extra hour is the introduction point. And in my version of it, rather than smart systems and devices, the designers have gone straight to the body. So people get an implant in their abdomen that gradually releases the extra hour. But what happens then is that it starts to malfunction for people who already have this slippery relationship to clock time. So people, for example, with chronic illness who might have disrupted daily routines or significant amount of time waiting in stress or boredom, troubled relationship with futures. And then there's also in the work people with neurodivergence, so who might have kind of executive dysfunctions or struggles with time management or difficulties perceiving how much time has passed. So with these people who already have that slippery time, they realize that not only is the device malfunctioning, but they can start to control it a bit. And so this is where it starts coming into, I think in the launch event, Aria Miller, the director of HAM, said she wasn't sure whether it was a utopia or dystopia.
That's a good point. Utopia or dystopia. Science fiction, or actually, I don't know, maybe we go to quantum physics or something like even more not so fictional anymore when we talk about the time. And I recently read again one of my favorite books, Carlo Rovelli's Order of Time, which is basically Carlo Rovelli is a physician and writes have written a lot about science and physics and time, sort of like a popularizing it somehow. But The Order of Time is basically, it's a book about time. And there are many, many really, really good examples of how time is not, how do you call it? There is no one time in the universe. Everything is sort of relational because time, the time that we humans name as time, it's sort of when you're closer to the center of the Earth, it goes faster or slower. Now I don't remember how is it. Maybe it goes faster, and then when you are sort of like at the top of the mountain, then you have a different time than when you are in the valley. So the time passes in different speeds for all of us. And then I started to think about all the like tall houses, like the skyscrapers, and people like down in the I don't know, somewhere in the parking halls, and there are different time to everyone. I really went deep with that. But yeah, I totally recommend the book Order of Time. It's also translated in Finnish. Can't remember the Finnish name, but it's an excellent book. I don't know if you please know the book, but
I know of the book. Yeah. I haven't read through it. I've had a quick look through it, but I haven't read it in depth. But I know that there's also a good discussion in there of how, with the Industrial Revolution and with the introduction of trains, how time got standardized and we lost local time and got to this sort of universal now in a way, and what the damages of that could be. So I think that comes back again to this piece that I'm also thinking about local time in a bodily as well as a geographical way.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I also recommend the audiobook of the English version because it's read by Benedict Cumberbatch, and I think Benedict is a great reader. So.
Is it possibly the most British thing ever?
Probably. And there are also like this Shakespeare quotes, so it's probably like beyond even like this British experience. But anyway. So time is, it's like many way that sort of the main theme of 25/7. Of course, the name sort of is a clue here. But when you first sort of read about this streamlining the city, or was it like streamlining the living in the city, or what was the...
From the PR.
Yeah. Was it...
So streamlining daily life.
Daily life. Okay. So, because that's something that, I sort of get provoked with that. I don't know if you felt the same, or did you sort of feel more inspired by that?
I think it's one of those things that it doesn't have a simple it's good or it's bad. It's, you know, there are many ways that the improved services can be very helpful, but I think it's dangerous when you get to an idea that all streamlining is helpful and that daily life would be improved if all deviations and errors and are stripped out, because that's where the interesting stuff happens. Yeah. You know, if it heads too far down the route of perfect productivity, and even though in the PR they're very careful to say that this extra hour is for people's free time, and they're really keen on that, I'm not sure how realistic that is to say that people would use it for that. There's a professor in UK called Ruth Ogden, who's Liverpool, John Moore's, I think, still there, who has the amazing title of Professor of the Psychology of Time. And she has written about the effect of time-saving devices and things that... Even that it's linked to our shifting definitions of what free time is and what it's for. So even though on the surface things like online banking can save you the time of having to go to the bank and do this and come back, it doesn't mean that it frees up more leisure time. It means that you cram more tasks into that time. So you're actually having a denser experience of time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's actually very true now that I sort of think of, well, online banking or whatever I'm doing with my phone. I'm doing a lot of stuff with my phone, and it's not, it's sort of an area where the free time and not the free time sort of get mixed up, and then I don't know what is what anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good example.
So yeah, it's not a simple good or bad, but I think it's very, nor is it as simple as saying it's for free time. Yeah. I think more thought has to be put into.
But I think it's anyway like an interesting question about time in our day, because we are talking about this all these like accelerating different like for climate crisis, and everything is sort of going forward more and more. There's more stuff happening in a shorter time period. For example, this climate crisis is happening, I don't know, not even like 100 years, and we have like the humankind has destroyed quite a lot of species and nature and all that. So when we're talking about like extra time, it's somehow like a paradox that, well, as we talked, that it's like, do we need actually more time, or do we need something more? Like, what is actually the, where should we start the discussion of this 24/7 a day, or 7, maybe 8 days a week or something? I don't know.
Yes, that also makes me think of some discussions within CRIP community, so from disability justice side, or disability politics, with frustrations that when people are asking for like accommodations, for example, for like I was saying before, if you're chronically ill or neurodivergent or a combination, that often there are no accommodations, but then sort of if there are accommodations, it's often just extra time to complete the thing so that you're back on track with the norm.
Yeah.
So you'd get an extra hour or an extra day or whatever to complete the assignment to slot back into the track you're supposed to be on, rather than something much broader of an understanding of your time needs and perceptions varying a lot. And one of the things, just to say with the 24/7, it's not just that the users who are having these malfunctions and then sort of hack the malfunctions, it's not only extra time, it's sort of these waves and eddies of time, or it's, everyone has very different experiences of it. But then in this, there's a, I don't know if I should spoil the ending, but there's a there's a collective realization. The phone calls kind of, people start to discuss the different malfunctions and hacks they're able to do and realize coming together they can create these more stable time rifts or collective rifts or temporal bolt holes. So I guess that's the closest I get to the extra time for people able to wink out of clock time for a bit.
Yeah, I love it. And also I love the, when you said that the tour that you or the route that you walk with and listen to different clips, it's about 30 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And because I totally lost my sense of time when I walked, and I thought that it's an hour actually, because you talk about hour, and then then I didn't even think about it, but now you just said that it's around 30 minutes, and
yeah,
and I started to think that, wow, where did the 30 minutes sort of disappear, or did I actually gain 30 minutes, or I don't know, it's the
kind of, because the Finnish and the English are each 30 minutes. You know, it might be a little bit off in a few seconds from the mix, but the idea of, okay, I had this cheesy title on myself, and I was like, I'm giving the extra hour. So,
okay. Yes. Thank you. The 24/7, the work that we are talking about here in the studio with artist Fliss Holland, it has been already there in Karlsataman Puisto for, I don't know, over a month. I think the first day was in November or the beginning of November.
Yeah, it was intended to launch a little bit earlier, but there were some construction works and things. So it's not possibly the funnest weather right now. I think once it's stopped being nasty and wet, it will be fine. Once it's cold and dry, that will be okay. But yes, it's going to be up for 3 years. So.
Okay, so have you had any feedback or anything like people who have experienced the work there?
Little bits are trickling back. It's always a difficult one with these kind of works. You sort of launch it and it drops into the void and you wonder what's happening with it. But yes, we've had some people enjoying going round. There's been quite a lot of response that people are enjoying being able to access off-site as well. So to compare, either because they can't get to the park or to be able to listen and then listen again.
Yeah, there are actually, my feedback would be that, okay, I was with Heppo and Heppo was nervous about a lot of things happening around us. So I couldn't really concentrate like 200% of everything that I heard. But some of the, for example, the more composed parts are definitely worth a listen at home. To sort of repeat the experience. Yep. So I also recommend that there's a lot of these different layers of the sound that maybe the headphones can't really are not probably the best way to listen to them when it's like noisy outside and when you have a nervous dog. So
yeah, true. And it's kind of I mean, it depends on headphones as well. It'll still work fine with earbuds in the park, but absolutely Yuli's beautiful compositions, I thoroughly recommend kind of coming home and listening through again. I maybe still on headphones at home for some of them. For example, the there's one talking about dust lanes and eating dust, and some of the others where this kind of EMF wind, that there's some of them are very dynamic that you'll get through the headphones.
So please, Holland, now we are able to visit your work for 3 years in Kalastamapuisto, but what else in the future? Where can we see your work?
I just had last week a performance at Baltic Circle that was again working with Yuli. This was more of a, not that the public project wasn't fun, this was more loose, kind of experimental. It was done, it's a project run by MCult and a Dutch organization called Metro 54 that's had a number of events over the past year called Everyday Priorities that was looking at art, technology and accommodations. And for the event we did at Baltic Circle, which was at Caneltello, and I was asked to do something in a very traditional theatre, which was terrifying. I've never done anything.
I know.
In that it's a very heavy frame, especially when you don't come from that background at all. But
even though you come from that background, it's always scary. It doesn't sort of disappear.
True. But yes, so we did a performance there that I would say it's, I don't know if it's in the same universe as 25/7 or in a sibling universe. It featured also the voice of Shubhangi Singh, who's one of the voice actors from 25/7. And it was again talking about relationships with time and technology, but this time it was further off into the future. So it was looking at Ursula Le Guin's Ansible device for interstellar communication. The idea is you get these instant communication without any delay. Yeah. And it was trying to push back against that, asking, do you really want this smooth, seamless version of communication and what might be lost?
So. Yeah. Hey, I have one. I said already the last question, but this is my last question to you, please. Now that we are talking about science fiction and art and time and future, I have to ask you, because I think we both sort of share the same, we share obviously the same love for science fiction, but when we are talking about making art now, 2025, and we have all these different political and ecological crises and wars and everything is happening around us, I think the role of art, for me at least, as an artist or as a person who sort of works in the field of arts, the art has become more and more sort of way to take part in discussions, sort of to somehow present utopias or way to survive or ways to cope with all this. And it's sort of like getting more and more closer to that's like the basic definition of science fiction, that you are dreaming of possible worlds, and sort of the gap is closing, at least in my mind. What do you think, please? How do you sort of experience this? Or is there actually a gap between making art and then science fiction? Maybe for you, you know, not so much, but...
That brings me back again to, you know, I was saying how Aria Miller had said in the introduction that she wasn't sure whether I was creating a utopia or a dystopia. And I was really pleased that that ambiguity had come through. And I think also, you know, I was referencing Ursula Le Guin and the Ansible, and she was very ambiguous about in the science fiction descriptions of her works as well. And I think that's one really useful thing that science fiction can do, and that I try to use the art to do as well, is that I was saying that classic sci-fi tool of changing one thing and seeing how it plays out. I guess the more extended version of that is if you change one thing, we assume to be a constant and see how it plays out. And it's a way of highlighting our relation to these norms that are usually invisible. And then that can, by making them visible, it's a way of making it clear that they're not set in stone and they're subject to change. And I think that links back into the idea of how we can survive and what ways there might be to live differently if through science fiction and through art we can highlight that maybe these aren't the ways we want to live. Maybe these aren't the futures that we want. And can we go somewhere else?
Yeah. Okay. I think we could continue this our discussion on science fiction and a little bit about art, or the other way around, for hours. But I think we must give the listeners a break. And I highly recommend go and experience the work 25/7 in Kalasataman Puisto. You can find the instructions on your website, fleecholland.com, but also in HAM Helsinki's website, or if I remember right. There must be some kind of information there. Yeah, there is. So hamhelsinki.fi, you can find the instructions also there and go and experience it. I highly recommend. Maybe not when it rains or it's dark, but maybe when the weather is a little bit better, go and check it out. Flees, thank you so much for coming here, and I hope you the best of days. Dark days, it's getting better, I trust.
Thank you so much.
Yhteistyössä HAM, Helsingin kokoinen taidemuseo, hamhelsinki.fi.